Hey there, friends. Jay Revel here. I'm so glad to have you listening in to another episode of Mid-Am Crisis. I've got a fantastic listening experience for you today. My good friend Matt Janella joins the show. You probably know Matt from his many years working for the Golf Channel. He's now going out on his own. He's got an exciting new venture, a company called Dawn Patrol Productions. That he's getting up and running, and he's actually in the process, as we speak, of moving his family from the beloved Winter Park community down in the Orlando area all the way back to the West Coast, to the greater San Diego region. He's literally packing up the family now. They're going to be traveling along with some of his production confidants across the country, stopping in and hosting a series of skins games along the way. Matt is such a great spreader of the gospel of golf, and he takes this really high energy, joyous atmosphere that he creates with him everywhere he goes. I've enjoyed the chance to get to know Matt over the last couple of the years. Spent some time down around with him and his family at the annual PGA merchandise show. We'll be sad not to see him at his normal Winter Park hang as much anymore, but I know he's going to do some great things out on the West Coast, and I'm just really excited to see what he continues to produce through his new company. They've got a new deal with Golf Digest and the Discovery Media Group. I think you're going to see a lot of really cool stuff coming out there, but we dove into a range of things. We talk about golf media. We talk about why the game is such a special opportunity to bond with family, friends, loved ones. We talked about just how golf is the great escape from all the troubles that seem to be popping up in our country. And of course, we talked about, you know, his career and the big move he's making. So anywho, I think you're going to really enjoy this listen. I had such a great time catching up with Matt, and I'm hoping to see him soon as he's getting on the road. I think his travels might bring him through my neck of the woods on the way out west. So anyway, enjoy the listen. Matt Janella, one of golf's great ambassadors. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll give us a subscription on your favorite listening device and leave us a nice little review. But without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to the conversation. Thanks again for listening to Mid-Am Crisis. Maddie.
Yes, Jay. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, pal. How you doing, man?
A lot going on, but good. You know, taking one thing at a time.
I see you got a lot going on, man. You're it looks like you're about to get your full blown Clark Griswold on.
I hope it's some sort of adventure like that. That would be fun. It would make for good social posts, that's for sure. Going from Winter Park to Goat Hill Park, and from one Friday skins to another, Muni to Muni, you know, coast to coast. We depart Friday evening right after our skins game, and hope to get in on Friday afternoon. All things going well, we'll get in at Friday afternoon to Goat Hill Park on Friday the 13th.
Well, perfect. I'm sure that'll be rolling out the red carpet for you. That's terrifying and exciting at the same time. I know anytime you're, you know, starting something new, moving the family across the country, that's can create a little anxiety. But I saw this little itinerary you've got of skins games across the country to get you there, break up the trip, man. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Katie and the kids and the dog are flying out on Thursday, and we'll get into San Diego and try to find us a place to live. So we got an Airbnb in the meantime to bridge the gap. And then my crew is coming in, and we had one final Friday skins game planned on this Friday anyway. And then thought, well, you know what, if we're going to cross the country, we might as well keep the sticks in the back of the trunk. So we got some partners. BMW's given us an X7 to take with us. So we got the U-Haul and an X7, and we got contacted some municipals along the way. So in Hugh we're going to Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Scottsdale, and then Goat Hill Park. And we started calling golf courses saying, is there any chance we could have kind of impromptu skins game late afternoon? So we got Gus Wortham on Sunday in Houston, and then Lyons Muni on Monday in Austin. Old Brackenridge, one of my favorite
Yeah.
Tillinghast public courses in San Antonio on Tuesday afternoon. And then Thursday we'll be at Scottsdale at Mountain Shadows, right at the base of Camelback Mountain, that converted that into a par three course, which I love. And then on Friday we'll roll into Goat Hill Park.
That's beautiful, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
You excited to get back on the West Coast?
I am, I left the West Coast when I graduated college, St. Mary's, in 1995, and drove my parents and their furniture. My parents flew out, and my brother-in-law drove the furniture truck cross country from Santa Rosa into Long Island. And that's when I called Sports Illustrated. I had carried cameras for them in the early 90s at 49er games and said, hey, I'm on the East Coast if you need someone to carry cameras. And that, it started this whole journey, this whole adventure I've been on for 25 years. And I got an internship at Sports Illustrated, which led me to Columbia Journalism School, which led me to writing for Golf Digest and Golf World, which led me to being the lifestyle guy at Golf Channel. So, and then I drove from New York to Orlando in 2013 and played golf along the way there. And then now I'm going from Orlando to San Diego. So kind of this big connecting of dots from Northern California to New York to Orlando to San Diego. So it's been a 25-year sort of professional path that has, had me had three different careers, working for three different companies. And now I'm kind of starting my own production company, as and partnering with Golf Digest and Discovery Media. And so a lot of kind of full circles and big old toolbox that I take from the East Coast and bring back to the West Coast in hopes of trying to continue to tell stories about the game we love, and the people
Yeah.
who play it.
You've kind of iterated through these evolutions in sports media and in particular golf media. What do you think this next wave looks like? We're coming off this, well, no, I shouldn't say coming off. We're in the middle of this pandemic and it's just reshaped everything in the world, it seems like. And golf and golf media won't be any different. So, I mean, what do you think the next few years looks like in that space?
Well, I mean, what the one of the silver linings to what has been just a devastating, global pandemic is just I is the game of golf. And that's hard to believe. I did a podcast in April with some industry leaders, and it was doom and gloom. People were like, oh my God, what's happening? Where are we all going? What's going to happen to the game? How long can some of these courses withstand just simply being closed? And not just courses, but resorts and destinations. And they all sounded like they'd seen a ghost. And then I did a follow-up with all those same people, and coming out of, I guess this would have probably been September. And they had all had their best couple months. They had all sort of recouped what they had lost and then some in the time that they had been shut down. And we have learned all the endemics are having the best year ever. All the courses that you talk to, as long as they have some decent leadership and management, are having amazing years. We're seeing that the game of golf has been this great, salvation to kids who have lost a lot of their sports and activities, to families who need time out of the house but time together. We see courses being used more as parks, like the Goat Hill Park, like Winter Park. That's where we went during the pandemic and threw the ball for the dog, and took walks with the family. And And we also talk about how the game is in such a better position to receive another wave of interest, like it did in the late 90s after Tiger came on the scene. We've reassessed and realized that the game was not in a good place to receive a tsunami of interest. At that time, we had too many rules and regulations and restrictions, and we said no more than yes, and we just sort of said, no, well, the game is not, the game didn't like, this didn't really like this idea of newcomers. As crazy as that sounds, that was the reality. And then we realized, okay, game takes too long, it's too hard, it's too expensive. And the tent poles of the game have created things like, well, in the last 22 years, we've seen the evolution of First Tee, PGA of America has started the PGA Junior Leagues. We got youth on course, which subsidizes green fees. We got Topgolf, we've got short courses, we've got a rejuvenation and a revitalization of municipal golf. And it's gone kind of one course at a time, one community at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time. And before we know it, we're like, wow, look at what's happening to the game of golf. So that's a really refreshing and positive thing. And then we also have the further development of social media, the sharing of information, digital media. That's happening on a regular basis. People have started their, all these GarageBand production companies, like Barstool or No Laying Up, and all podcasts. I mean, people like yourself who realize that you don't have to have an affiliation with a big network or media outlet to try to tell stories that mean something to you, or mean something to your community, or mean something to your following. And that, that's that, this has just become a pretty cool pocket of goodness, if you ask me. It doesn't mean that we agree with everybody, or we're like-minded in every shape or way or form. Not everybody's trip is the same, but they're still buddy's trips. It's still camaraderie. It's still people getting together I just got back from my buddy's trip at Bandon Dunes. My friend, best friend from high school is on that trip. My best friend from college is on that trip. But there's also the president of Pioneers and president of Kemper Sports and everybody in between. And it's this mosh pit of people who have a common interest in the game of golf and all the good stuff that happens around it. And rinse and repeat, right? I mean, just keep that going. And now I have a son, 3.5 years old, who I'm gingerly, introducing to the game of golf in all the right ways, shapes and forms. And then our daughter, who's 16, played high school golf and has a set of clubs, and will probably be with me at the father-daughter at Waterville next summer, assuming we get things back to something relating to normal. But it's all there for you. If you have a slight interest in the game of golf, and in the last 8 months it hasn't, you haven't fostered that love, then you kind of missed the boat.
Yeah, that's so well said. I get accused a lot of times of being an optimist. And
You asshole. Quit
I
being
know, right?
optimistic.
I'm the same, man. I look at this landscape and I just go, man, there's never been more funnels for people to find their way into golf. I think we all get kind of sucked into spending too much time on Twitter, and things can get kind of, we turn into debates and slinging shit at each other and stuff. But it's fun. But I mean, the thing about it is that all of that ends up just generating more, eyeballs and attention to golf. And we really do have some pretty incredible outlets. And I've always kind of laughed at the crowd that says, golf is dead, 24 months ago. And I'm like, I just don't understand what you're seeing. Now, granted, when you go through a big shift in how people are spending their time with something like golf, you certainly see, a few cadavers here and there. But what's happening, I think, is, to your point, the game is right-sizing, the game is modernizing, it's becoming something that's much more approachable, something that's much more available, and the products that don't fit that demand are falling off. And that's okay. That's, you know, that's called capitalism. That's the way it works, you know? So I think there is a lot of positive trends out there happening in the world. And I think that, you know, there's still going to be some interesting evolution happening over the next, you know, year or two here, but I'm pretty bullish on the future of the game.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, no, there would be no reason. There would be no reason not to be. Obviously, you know, we're going to continue to get more efficient with our use of resources. So, you know, a lot of places, like I just got back from Pasatiempo, even Goat Hill Park was on potable water, so-called quote potable water, drinking water. That's, you know, reclaimed water is the big deal. And then, you know, just of course is, you know, like look at Sheep Ranch, no bunkers, you know, no sand bunkers. That's going to be, I think, what could be potentially a new trend. And probably a cool trend too, you know, if, you know, because maintenance costs is an issue. The more we can kind of minimize maintenance costs, the better, you know, the easier it is going to be to keep green fees at an affordable rate. So, so, you know, a lot of these things will keep happening. This is all, you know, and then, you know, again, the development of short courses or par three courses it seems to be the conversation I have more and more often, and I'm sure you do the same. I know there's going to be the reimagination of 18 hole facilities or 36 hole facilities or 54 hole facilities, whatever the case may be, to, oh, well, maybe we don't need 36. We'll go to 27. Maybe we don't need 30, you know, maybe we don't need 18. We'll go to 9 and a 3-hole, you know, kids court. You know, this is going to keep happening. Because quite frankly, we had too many generic, you know, 18-hole, overpriced, you know, under delivering, too hard, you know, that we had an oversupply of those. So you talked about laws of economics a little earlier, just sort of the idea of, you know, supplies and demands. The demand is very high right now for a facility in which we can go and, you know, to use the basketball analogy, play 3-on-3 or 2-on-2 or half court basketball, play pig or horse or 1-on-1 or just shoot around, you know what I mean? And so that demand is high, something that is cost effective and time effective. And so if we keep, you know, if we keep building those and we keep having those experiences and being able to afford that stuff, you know, that again, it all just keeps evolving. This is an evolution. Golf was never going anywhere. It just was under extreme pressure to make changes that made sense. Sensibility, you know, what's wrong with that?
No, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think an important part of that too is you rattled off a whole slew of these, but there's so many more ways for people to discover that these other options for golf are available. You know, just today I saw, you know, Rob Collins was posting a picture of a 6-hole reversible course that he's laid out, you know, for a client. And I'm like, man, damn, that's so cool. You know, I mean, you know, in one day you could, you know, you could play it both ways. Maybe, you know, you got a 12 hole. That's a great day. But you're seeing just this sort of, it's like the shackles are coming off the game where people are going, hey, well, you know, this really can look a whole lot of different ways. I always like to use the expression, you know, golf in small doses. You know, there ought to be some small facility for golf in every town in America, whether it's just a putting green in the town square or a 6-hole reversible course like Rob's talking about building, or a Goat Hill, or just a really great, you know, driving range. I mean, all of those things, just that's the key to me to keeping and grow the game. And I think one of the things that I've always enjoyed about your work is you tell those stories very well. And I think that, you know, when I'm looking at you, I know, you know, you're going through transition, moving the family across the country, new production company up and running. I'm curious what kind of stories you think you're excited to get out and tell next.
Well, I'm already you know the podcast that I started, the Fire Pit, is I did season one, 15 episodes, and then we had a couple bonus episodes that were more timely and more sort of topical. But and those were those again as you know, I mean a podcast is such a cost-effective way of trying to tell stories, and it really kind of happened out of the pandemic and being quarantined and feeling like, okay, I've done all my house sort of projects that I had wanted to do and revamp some closets in the backyard. And then I thought, well, I mean, we could, what is this podcast thing? I kind of always thought I would have one. It would be a byproduct of some of what we were doing. And then it just got it, one thing led to the next, and it, and even within the season, it evolved as a way of telling a story with multiple voices, one story, multiple voices, we're stringing those together. And and it's the Fire Pit being like, that's a place where you go and listen to stories or tell stories, and kind of a communal little area that was inspired mostly by the Fire Pit in the trees at Bandon Dunes. And then so I'm already halfway through season two, and it's like, for me, I can't, I'm just looking to find great stories and then figuring out ways to tell them. So, cut them up in a lot of different ways. All right. So this is a great story that can be told long form in podcast, short form socially, medium form digitally, and then see what else is left over, what's on the cutting room floor, and where else can we repurpose that kind of stuff. And that's the way I'm looking at everything now. So for me, I've got a list of like 60, last time I looked, 64 different story ideas of either people tipping me off on something, or kind of go back and revisit something, or this is something I've always wanted to t this is always a story I've wanted to tell. And I'm already halfway through. I'm already sort of halfway through season two of starting to bank these interviews. I'm in a bit of a transition right now. We kind of had to shut down operations a week ago, and we'll shut it down now for the next 10 to 14 days as I get reset up in the West Coast. But I can't be more excited about what I'm about to share with the community, that I've built over years of I just follow my nose, right? Like, that's what we just do. Like, if we see something, oh man, well, maybe if I should talk to that person, Nancy Lopez, Lanny Wadkins. I've got a very close relationship with Tim Rosefort, who's battling, Alzheimer's right now, and I've been spending a lot of time with him, taking him to Palm Beach Par 3 every week, having these little sunset, rounds of golf with a guy who, his brain is being attacked. Just watching what it does for him as he tries to make pars and birdies from 70 yards while the ocean is crashing in the background and the sun is setting and we're having a beer together. It's, these are just, it's just, golf is life, as you know better than anybody. And that it just kind of all blends into one. And so pulling out these little nuggets or these moments or these reflections and stories from these people who love, who are good storytellers, is that's going to be my whole motivation.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, I sit there, I think about what you were just talking about with Rose Ford and being out there with the sun going down and waves crashing and chasing a lot more than just the golf ball, obviously. But I think about, I played with my grandfather on Sunday, and my brother's been in town for a few weeks. Came in town for our member guest. He's leaving today, actually, and going back out west. But we got to chance play my dad, my granddad, my brother all together. We get to do it, maybe a couple of times a year. My granddad's 86, so you always sit and think, okay, every time you play that, you don't know if you'll ever get to do it again, just being realistic. But man, he made a 50-foot birdie putt on the last hole from off the green, and he points at me and he just says, "Got my number." He made it to shoot his age. And
Wow.
and just sitting there, and I just was like, man, that was so damn cool. And I'll
Yeah.
never forget that. I mean, in those
Yeah.
moments you get like that. are so unique, and you know, you're not going to get that playing basketball with your friends underneath the city lights. You're not going to get that, you know, on a tennis court. You're not going to get that in so many other ways. But golf, to your, you know, what you were saying, it is life. And I was up in front of this crowd talking about my book the other day, and I just kind of was blunt with them. I said, "Hey, this is not a book about golf. This is a book about life, and it happens to be set in golf." And then, and I said, if you've ever met anyone that you share a bond with through the game of golf, I think you're going to like it." And that's my favorite thing about the game. And every time I find an opportunity to connect with someone like you or just anyone else in the game, I'm always just amazed at the depth of those life experiences that everyone has through golf. I mean, it is the universal connector. It's the reason that when you see that person, you know, who's a total stranger walking through the airport, who's got a familiar golf logo on, you smile and you want to go talk to him. Or the same thing, if you're halfway across the country, you light up when you recognize the golfer, because you know you're going to have that commonality and that shared bond, and you can immediately almost become friends. It's such an incredible game. And I've always enjoyed watching how you are a wonderful ambassador for it, man.
Well, we're all in it together, you know. I mean, you're doing a lot of the same. You're doing a lot of the same kind of spreading the love, you know. And it's all true. I mean, I just, you know, I'm gonna be have this last skins game here at Winter Park. The game keeps going on. We got a couple guys who are gonna take it over, and you know, it's not that complicated, right? It's just guys show up, you know, and guys and girls, men and boys and girls and women, and it's just been this great little community melting pot of like-minded people. And quite frankly, you know, people have come from a long way away to participate. It just blows me away. It's been, you know, Ireland, Canada, Australia. We've had people from all over who participate, and I've now watched those people, some of those people. I drive down the street. I just saw the other day, I'm driving down, and I always pass the golf course to get home. And I saw a couple people who I know met at the Skins game who were out playing golf together, putting out on the fifth green. And I thought, how cool is that? How cool is that? I know they met at the Skins game, and now they're playing golf separately together as friends. But that's happened a lot. I know people have just simply become friends and are doing things not only with each other, but with each other's families because of meeting at this little, you know, random, spontaneous Friday Skins game. And I get calls all the time, Jay, where people say, "Oh, what, how do you do the Skins game? I want to get that going in my community. How'd the Winter Park Nine get redeveloped? How did it?" And it's all about just simply a commitment to community. You know, if to redo the golf course, or to save a muni, or to save a golf course you care about, or to because it's in your town, you've been playing it since you were a kid, which is what John Ashworth did at Goat Hill Park. He's the ultimate kind of link soldier and leader of for me. He's my mentor on so many things, golf and life, and one and the same. But that's just it. Is like it just comes down to fit, you know, control what you can, like. Fix what you can. What's actually tangible? Where can you have an impact? Community, right there. That golf course down the street. Get involved. Start something. It doesn't take much. And over time, you look, you blink, and you go, "Wow, look what's happening here. This is something real. This is really having an impact on people's lives." And if we all did that, you know, then you get down to what you're talking about, which is then there's something in every town. And what's wrong with that?
Not a thing. I mean, you know, and that's one of the things I always think about in those scenarios, right? Is like, these things are not hard. They do require some effort, but they're not particularly hard. The hard part is just showing up regularly and putting that effort in. And you know, I always wonder, you know, why our game doesn't do a better job. And maybe it is starting to happen, but some of the ruling bodies, some of the big organizations in golf, why is there not a more obvious playbook, you know, for people to just kind of be able to say, "Okay, here's the playbook and for how to build a community at our golf course. Here's the three easiest things I can do."
I just always am curious, or maybe why there are just so many places that aren't willing to put in that little extra bit of effort. I don't know.
Well, you know, I remember John Ashworth and I had a lot of conversations about similar things, like how can what to you know what to, and at the end of the day, and this is what I know he preached to me, and what I now preach to people who ask, is you've got, you know, if you sit around and wait for the USGA to save the day, it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. If you sit around and wait for the PGA of America to come in, or Augusta National, or like Youth on Course started Northern California Golf Association, and went from one golf association to now like 35 or 36. They're now in Canada. They are a victim of their own success in that they've got so many golf associations, so many kids being signed up now, right now, in these last 8 or 9 months. They've got to, like, you know, they've got to really buckle down on these funding. But if they sat around and waited for the USGA to come in and help them, they would have never expanded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're doing it on their own, and they're going one golf association to the next. And now, you know, 8 years later, they're having a significant impact on that affordability factor by subsidizing kids' rounds of golf, by making sure they're not paying anything more than $5. That's impact. That, and it's not just to try to get kids playing golf. It's to get kids on golf courses to have the types of life experiences that we know that we've had, that we continue to have, that we now want our kids to have, right? And be able to afford them, to have them have those experiences. But my point going back to it is it's about just, the passion play. You know, I give my wife a lot of credit. When I started the Skins game, you know, that meant every Friday afternoon, if I'm in town, I'm going to Winter Park 9. And she's never had a problem with that. It's down the street. It's our community. It's that kind of camaraderie. She knows, you know, she knows I work hard, I play hard. She didn't look at that as, she didn't resent it. She embraced it. She came out and helped me. She comes out at the end of it. She brings Bandon out, and he runs down the fairway and sees me come up the ninth fairway. You know, that's inspired his love of the game by just being around it, by seeing, like, he calls everybody on the golf course my friend. We pass the golf course. He goes, there's dad's friends, you know, and in a way, he's kind of right. They are. That is the way to look at it, is we're all friends here. This is our town. This is our park. It's Winter Park Golf Course, Goat Hill Park. That's why John wanted to call it. Look at it more as like a park, a place to, you know, to get together. So it's those passion plays for people who love the game, yes, but also more importantly, sort of love their community. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think that's so spot on. And, you know, every time I think about the future, particularly like of municipal golf and, you know, Florida, for as much kind of crap as I think our state gets for, you know, maybe not having a lot of the right golf products
in Florida.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's accurate. We do have, you've talked about a few, but we've got some of the best shining examples of municipal golf in the whole country. I mean, Winter Park obviously is one model that's just done terrific. The Palm Beach Par 3 is just an exceptional facility. Yeah. You go up into Jacksonville Beach. I mean, what those cats have done up there is so awesome.
Yeah.
And there's numerous others. And, you know, and these things, like you said, they're contagious. You know, if you ever visit a community that has it going on, it makes you want to go back home and find that little spark at the place that you love. And we are seeing that start to spread, which is just super cool.
Yeah. And I suspect we'll just continue to see more of it, because I think, you know, unfortunately, when you talk municipals, you also unfortunately have to talk politics. And credit to the mayor here of Winter Park at the time, Steve Leary, for knowing what he didn't know. He plays golf, but he's not really a golfer. And there is a difference. People who play golf as opposed to being like golfers, right? Born, raised around the game. And, you know, he's been doing other things in life and was put in a position to, you know, and some passionate locals came to him and said, I think this golf course needs help. We're 100 years into it. It's, you know, there's been nothing done to it. No, no investment into it. It's losing 250 grand a year. I think if we spend a little money, we can actually turn things around. It's got great bones, great history, great location, you know. And to the mayor's credit, he said, okay, well, let's get an advisory board and tell me what I should do here. I want to hear some plans. I want to hear some thoughts. I want to hear some ideas. And then let's figure out a way to end with 1.2 million. He hired the right guys and they did the great job that they did, Keith and Riley. And then now they're making 150 grand and that's with really no food and beverage. And that's sort of just simply making a better golf course. And then they got a ton of national recognition because they did it so well and because it is what it is. And the timing was right, you know, because this renaissance and revolution, so to speak, is happening in terms of, you know, short golf, nine hole golf, community golf. But in that, you had a politician who was the right minded politician who said, okay. And then, you know, he gets a lot of credit for it. And it ends up being a great thing for him, got him reelected for sure, in part, because that's you needed to get that. I tell people, get a local politician who's going to realize, oh, wait a minute, I can look really good. If I get behind this, I can potentially get reelected. If you get them on board to looking good, you know what I mean?
Oh,
I
yeah.
say, everybody, find a local politician. You know, that's what John had at Goat Hill Park. That's what they've had at places like Pasadena, where they needed to kind of convert the water. You know, that's Keeney Park, Week Wake, Canal Shores is now in the process of trying to do what they need to do to try to, you know, make that sort of, you know, enjoy the fruits of whatever labor is going to go into that, you know, sort of revamp that, you know, Chicago, it's, you know, I wouldn't call it municipal because it's actually sort of, you know, funded by themselves, you know, there's no city money there, but you got to do a little digging and say, okay, you got to play politics in a municipal situation, unless they just give you the keys to the car, like they did to John Ashworth, which is what Oceanside did, and said, look, we can't do this anymore. We're terrible at managing golf courses. You do it. And that is, therein lies the rub there. You know, most cities are not good at managing golf courses, managing the game of golf and all that goes with it. Like I said, there's difference between being a golfer playing the game and being raised a golfer. You know what I mean? And most of the times, if you get politicians involved, they might play golf, but they're not golfers, and that's a problem.
No, that's spot on. I was having a conversation with our city manager here in Tallahassee about 2 weeks ago, and we just were kind of talking about, you know, the game, and you know, he grew up playing, same thing, but he's not, you know, not really a golfer. And you realize that, you know, you have these scenarios all over the country with municipal facilities where you have people who kind of are golf adjacent or golf familiar running these things. You know, they're run out of parks and rec departments. And there's just such a, even though you want a golf facility to feel like a park, it just, the mechanics of it are so different.
Yeah.
And when you don't have that intimate knowledge of the industry and how to, you know, which levers to move, it can result in some pretty hefty losses in a damn hurry. And,
Quickly.
You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, if there was a blueprint, like we were talking about, maybe it doesn't come from one of these big major organizations, but if we can get some of the people who have cracked the code, you know, on some of these local levels, I mean, you've done a great job, you know, trumpeting these things, but they can say, hey, here's the 5-step playbook for how to improve fortunes at your municipal place, and give people a little bit of a good place to start. I think it could help. But, you know, all in all, I think, you know, I do think you're going to see, because of the amount of people who have come back to golf during and because of the time made available to them in this pandemic, I actually think you're going to start to see some positive pressure back on municipal golf that counteracts some of the, you know, there is an anti-golf crowd out there that wants to sort of shut some of these places down, but you know, you see things like the National Links Trust and what they're doing up there in DC. You know, you're seeing a bit of a pivot there, I think, to get that reverse pressure to get these things back in line.
Yeah, Cobb Creek in Philadelphia. Creek in Philadelphia is another one where, you know, friends of Cobb's Creek, they've spent years. They've had the money, right? They've had the interest. They've had that. They had that local passion play that we've talked about. And it took them years to get this all through, all the mechanics of the politics and the approvals and the right people on the board at the right time. They finally get in. But this has been going on for almost a decade. I mean, yeah, that's how long it took. And they're finally going to get a chance to shut this thing down. And Gil and Jim Wagner are going to go in there and do what they've wanted to do for years. But think about that. That's how long it took. I mean, you know, that's going to be a multi-million dollar project. That's going to pay huge dividends now and the foreseeable future. You know, that a kind of dividends that could go on for decades in terms of a community and having a safe place for people to go with their kids, for kids, with their family, with their buddies, with their significant others, with their dates, you know what I'm saying? You know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, so you got that. You got all that aspect. You've got the places like Pinehurst that reimagined their front porch with the putting course and the cradle, which is going to, you know, it's a revolutionary when, you know, Bandon and what Mike Kaiser has done to introduce this idea of putting courses and short courses like the Himalayas old course. That's the crazy thing. It's like all of this goes back to like the old course, you know, where they, you know, there's dogs out there. Like, why did we ever deviate from that? Do you know what I'm saying? Like where people go out there, they're crossing the fairways with their dog. There's the putting course there. They've got a wide variety of different courses out there from shorter to longer to wide open, strategic, find your golf ball, go hit it. I mean, by the way, it's the home of golf. Why did we ever get away from that model? You know, it just drives you crazy because it's been all right there. It's always all right there. The business models for private clubs is all there in the UK, you know, Scotland and Ireland. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, charge a premium for people who are out of town, you know, secure tee times for people who are quote members, but then, you know, have availability for people when your golf course isn't full so that you keep, you know, the food and beverage and the sort of the staff busy. I mean, is it really that complicated or is it, you know, there are private clubs with people who have that are on multiple committees and the committees need to talk to the other committee and they need to have a meeting and they're on phone calls and conference calls for hours at a time. And they're dissecting the idea of should this bunker be there? Let's take that bunker out. Let's redo that green. And before you know it, it's gotten totally away from what the original intent of the original architect is, who happened to be like, you know, Tillinghast or Donald Ross or one of the greats, you know. And then they're like, oh shit, now we got to spend a bunch of money to go back to let's get those old plans and redo it, you know, or you know what I mean? Like, it's just there's so much dysfunction and mismanagement, but in spite of all of that, the game continues to evolve and thrive and will be here for forever. To me, in my opinion, it's not going anywhere.
Well, you know, the thing that probably encourages me most about what we're seeing as a result of the pandemic, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about this, obviously, and it's, you know, a terrible national, international tragedy. It's getting, you know, it's just wrecked, you know, havoc all over the place. But to golf's credit, golf has once again found a way to remind people that it is so important to just go out and be in nature with friends and have fun and relax and have downtime. You know, we've gotten some downtime back, and it's so critical for everyone, I think, to be able to have some of that. And when you look back across the pond and you see how they live in Scotland and in Ireland and in the, you know, just throughout the UK and all that area, you know, golf is a pastime, and it's important. There's an importance to appreciating downtime. And, you know, I always love that line, you know, in Golf in the Kingdom, you know, he talks about that it's a game for the in-between, you know, and most of our time is in between. And I just think when I look at the future of golf in America and I look at what we're going through with the pandemic, my greatest hope is that people, while they're going out and spending some time on the golf course because they have time available to them, that they'll come away and realize, I really should be doing more of this because it makes me more whole, makes my life more whole, makes me feel more complete. It makes me feel more fulfilled. And if golf can open that window up, the game's going to just sail into a whole new stratosphere, I think.
It is. And you got to be in the right place of mind to receive it. You know, not you, but, you know, person, each individual, you know, cause you know, I didn't always get it. You know, I'm sure you probably didn't always get it. There was a time when I literally teed it up to simply try to shoot a score. Right. And I always say, my goal was to break 80. And if I didn't break 80, I'd break a club. You know what I mean? Like I didn't get it. And and it was enough times being around my uncle or my dad or my uncle's friends, or eventually you have to go away from the game as you're trying to find your career and you're working hard. And I was living in New York, and in order to go play, I was playing once a month, maybe. And when I did it, eventually over time, you start, you know, you have enough bad scores, you have enough humbling moments that the game will deliver on any moment's notice where you're like, okay, this can't be what this is about. This has to be about something more. And then eventually you go on a buddy's trip and you realize, oh my God, this is a connector. You know, when I started doing that story on called The Ambush for Golf Digest, which is when I would go out and tell stories about people's buddy trips. I did 60 of those stories and I went to every pocket of the country. I mean, from Nebraska to, you know, you name. I mean, yeah, I was in Myrtle Beach. I was Bandon Dunes, Pinehurst. I was in Las Vegas. I was in Scottsdale. You know, you name it. I pretty much was there. And I saw families getting together. I saw them, you know, tributes to people who used to be on the trip who have now died. I saw, you know, cool traditions, right, and different ways to. But the common, you know, the common thread through it all was camaraderie, was this fraternity or sorority in some cases, or something that felt similar to that, you know? And that's when I started to realize, come on, this is, you know, and then I started the Uncle Tony Invitational in honor of my Uncle Tony while he was still alive, knowing that I wanted him to know that I was so grateful for him to getting me into the game, that this was going to go on as a tribute to him and all the souls that he had linked through the game of golf, because he got me into the game of golf, you know. So Uncle Tony is really, you know, we always start every Uncle Tony invitation with this tribute video to him, which is like, if it wasn't for him, none of us would be in the room right now. You know what I'm saying? You know, mm-hmm. that, you know, you start getting that, you start understanding that. And then if you're open to that, if you're in that place in life, and you play golf, well, then what you're going to get is so much more than you can ever give back. And that's why, you know, you and I think have talked about this, but like for us, like we're going to try to give back as much as the game has given to us, but it's never going to happen. We're never going to achieve that. We're never going to give back more than we get, because we've gotten so much and we continue to do so and will for our entire life.
It's awfully fun to try though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and that we are going to die trying, you know, and mm-hmm. you get that moment with your grandfather, and I've got moments with my dad and my uncles. Uncle Bill, who's Uncle Tony's brother-in-law, still comes on our trip, and he's 81, and he had a putt to shoot his age at the Sheep Ranch because we had benign conditions, and he got on a heater, and he's got a great short game. And I mean, he had a putt, and you know, I didn't play with him that day, but the people who did, I just talked to one of the guys today, and he of all the things that he was recounting about that Uncle Tony invitation, which were Bandon Dunes for 5 days. And so you can imagine all the fun stuff that happens. He said his main highlight was watching Uncle Bill have a putt to shoot his age at Sheep Ranch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what, yeah. Isn't that so cool? That was Uncle Bill's lowest round of his life.
That's incredible. I mean, that's the magic, man.
Yeah. It's magic. It's magic. Mm-hmm. It's magic.
No doubt.
We got the Wishbone Brawl coming up at Goat Hill Park.
Oh,
That
yeah.
we're gonna, that's coming up in November. We're going to tape it on November 23rd and drop it the Sunday after Thanksgiving. But you remember last year, Jeff Ogilvie
Oh,
aced
incredible.
the first hole of a playoff. Xander Schauffele, Chris Riley, Dean Wilson, and Jeff Ogilvie. You know, and they talk about a community. You know, playing Persimmon Woods at this local golf course that they saved. You know, so I mean, that's the kind of stuff. That's all there for you. If you're into that, the game of golf is here for you.
Yeah, I mean there was this great photo that someone took from that last year, and it's Ogilvy sitting there holding the ball, and he's got this look in his eye like an 11-year-old kid, you know what I mean? And you just can see that wonderment, and you're like, man, that is so damn cool.
Yeah, this is a guy who won, you know, World Golf Championships, a U.S. Open. God only knows how many other things he's. And I guarantee you, if you asked him today, this is one of his top highlights in his life in golf. No doubt about it. Swish, swish, game over,
Walk
walk
off.
off.
That's cool. Who all you got coming out this year for that?
It's going to be Xander Schauffele and Dean Wilson versus Charlie Hoffman and Chris Riley. So two
Oh,
UNLV
great.
guys versus Dean and Xander, who have played. They've had this same foursome again, and I think they're also working on another potential female twosome, so a female team
Oh,
as well. It's
nice.
just a little complicated with COVID,
Yeah.
and they it just but they still want to get it done and still want to raise money for charity and. And Xander is really taking this on as kind of his thing, and it's been really fun to see and just be a small part of as just an observer and quote promoter, I guess you could say. But I mean it's I mean it, we're talking about trying to get more wishbone brawls all over the country with local
Oh, yeah.
pros who play these municipal type courses like we're talking about. Think about Trevor Immelman and Nick Faldo or you know, Annika Sorensen coming out to Winter Park 9 and playing a 9-hole. You know, would you watch that? Them playing Winter Park 9 for charity? How great would that
Oh,
be? Like,
so cool.
why wouldn't we have more of these type events at local munis in which you know the named players sort of you know kind of become one with the town that they live in? You know what I mean?
Man, one of my favorite memories growing up was at our 9-hole golf course, small town. My uncle, this is back when he was playing on the tour, and he brought in, I don't know, 12 or 15 guys. From some of them were, Nike Tour guys, and some of them were sort of that bouncing back and forth in the big tour. And they came in and descended on our little place for a couple of days and had this really cool pro am. And I remember I was probably like 14 years old. And the team I was on, we got into the shootout in the pro am, and the way we ended up settling it all up was we played the last two holes on the course backwards with all these pros out there, balls flying around everywhere, man. And I chipped in on the last hole to win the damn thing, and everybody went nuts. I mean, it was just the coolest thing. And it's like, man, that's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. And so when I see pros like, Xander or those guys who are doing that, who are embracing that level community, I think about that. I'm like, man, that I'm rooting for that. That's the kind of professional golfer I'm rooting for always.
Yeah,
It's
well
so
that
cool.
yeah, those guys all hang out afterward. Last year they had like 700 people out there at the Wishbone Ball. This will be the fourth year, and we're gonna miss the crowd obviously, but we're gonna still sort of try to tell the story and raise money. But Ogilvie, those guys all hung out after we went out to dinner. We sat around the fire pit later at the Goat Hill Park. I mean, it's not every professional golfer loves playing golf. Right. I mean,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
sometimes it's a job for them. But guys like Xander, who still has that kid in him, that's really obvious, right? We saw it in Jordan Spieth for a long time. We saw it in Rory McIlroy for a long time. We saw it for Tiger Woods for a long time. The kid in them lives in there. And Jeff Ogilvie's a guy that takes trip to Abandoned Dunes, carries his own bag, does a little travel. Like those guys love the game.
Yeah.
They love the game like we love the game. They talk about the game like we're talking about the game. You know what I'm saying? If you go to Victoria Golf Club, which is where Jeff's a member in Melbourne, like you realize, oh my God, anybody who comes from here is a golfer. This is about golf. This is in the blood. You know what I mean? Like it's about all that we're talking about. And I don't know that when you get guys that are at the professional level who have that kind of energy and attitude, that's infectious. You know, that's mm-hmm. hard. That's hard. Like you said, you root for that.
Yeah. Well, and when I think about kids in particular, you know, when a kid sees that you can, you know, still be a kid in golf when you're, you know, when you're like your uncle, 81 years old, that's really encouraging. You know what I mean? That's how people get hooked on the game. And
oh yeah,
that's what it's all about. Yeah. Well, man, I think you're set up to spread some more of that gospel on the way to the West Coast next week. I'm just thrilled for your journey, man. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. That is really kind of the idea. Is like we're driving it anyway. We might as well just, you know, hey, try to meet up with some old friends, make some new friends. And I really love, you know, as you know, and you feel the same, I just love, you know, I love it. And I'm, you know, in social media, the game is social, and here we have social media, you know, at a time when the game is going through this massive evolutionary phase. And, you know, you put something out like on Twitter and you get all these comments, you get all this immediate reaction. You're like, God, this is amazing. This is really amazing. Yeah. This is really cool. This is really, I love all these golf courses. Each one of them has their own separate story. It's a culture, right? Within that community, that course is part of the culture. And so travel, as I've always said, is the greatest form of education. And, you know, we're in the same country, but I'll be going from state to state. And here we are, have all this, the political, you know, bullshittery that's happening right now. But at the end of the day, you know, the common ground can be found. You know, I don't give a shit who you voted for or what your politics are. You know, if you want to come out to this skins game, we're going to throw $20 in. And then it doesn't matter. It doesn't yep. matter. We're trying to get the ball in. As my uncle said, it's about getting the ball in the hole. Just get the ball in the hole and try to get that ball in the hole faster than everybody else. And then, you know, at the end of the day, we'll sit around and we'll talk about like what we should have done or what we could have done or how we should have done. I mean, you know, it's going to be golf.
Yeah, man, you just can't beat it. That's I love that way to kind of frame it all up, man. There's so much talk about division and all this other horse shit. And I'm just like, man, I literally tweeted it this morning. It's day after the election. I'm like, go play golf today. You'll feel a lot better about everything. You just will, you know, it's the truth.
You will. And go out as a single and meet a few people. And, you know, I 28 guys on our buddies trip. I can only imagine how many different people were voted differently on that trip. But, you know, we never talked politics.
Yeah.
We had fire pits and we had music and we had camaraderie and we had a little competition and we were changing partner. We had a putting course. We had a short course. We were in the greatest places on planet Earth, which is Bandon Dunes. And just sort of, it wasn't political. It was spiritual. And how good is that?
Yeah. Totally with you on that vibe. Well, when you hang a left on I-10 next week, if you want to come see my fire pit up here, would love to have you come meet some of the guys and hang out.
Might take you up on that. We'll be rolling through on Saturday, I believe. So we'll be right on. I think we take I-10 for quite a while.
Oh yeah, you're gonna be on there for a long time.
Yeah.
Well. Stop on through in the capital city. We'll give you a proper Florida send-off.
Cool, Jay. Well, always a pleasure to catch up, bud, and keep up all your great work. And, if, you know, obviously if there's anything I can do, I'm always here for you. I can, you know, whatever I can do, I'm happy. And I appreciate all your support and again, all your energy and attitude towards the game because we all win and we are all in this together. So,
no doubt. Well, I appreciate it, Matty, and safe journeys on the road. And hopefully we'll get to see you along the way, pal.
Thanks, Jay. Talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Be good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.